man. This aircon is racist.
I've never ever been a spy.
Can the PBS bank loot?
The problem is that Pinky.
I'll never subject myself to whitening. I'm listening.
Can you have consistency, Honorable Chair?
Corruption was an Olympic sport. They will always win gold.
This is not a ship.
At arms, can you please come in?
Point of order.
Welcome to your weekly dose of political shenanigans with us at the Sunday Times Politics News Desk. This is the Sunday Times Politics Weekly Podcast. With my team here, Zingisa Mvumvu, Apiwe de Klerk, and Zimasa Matawane. Guys, thank you so much for joining us in studio. We've come off a great month with our increased listenership at the podcast. So we're doing really well. I just want to thank everyone who's listening in. Thank you for the support. We're growing and we're loving the responses we're getting on Twitter as well. Please interact with us on Twitter at hashtag STPoliticsWeekly. And we're going to get straight into it with our first section, the good, the bad, and the newsworthy. Kicking it off, we always love to start with some juicy news around our former president, Jacob Zuma. And this week, he's in the news again. He has urged the youth of the ANC to use next year's National General Council to reignite the fight for economic freedom. Now, he says this, but we know it's not really what he means. Zuma was addressing a packed hall of ANC Youth League members during a dialogue exploring the role of the league in the party in Sophiatown. This was last week, Thursday. He suggested that the ANC's revolution had reached a stagnant phase and went on to tell young people that they need to take a central role in ensuring that policies which seek to resolve the plight of ordinary South Africans are prioritized, even if they negatively affect investor confidence. Now, this is a massive jab at our current president, Cyril Ramaphosa. Massive jab. Because basically what he's saying is that screw Ramaphosa's investment drive. If our policies are not speaking to that, then don't worry about it. And what he's also saying is that the ANC's resolution has reached a stagnant phase. So he's criticizing Ramaphosa's leadership once again. Let's listen to a little bit of what the former president said first.
We are going to the NGC next year. As the youth, you should be saying, here is an opportunity. Let us compile our presentation as the ANC Youth League on these matters. In that gathering of the branches, that's what I would be saying. And in addition, I would be saying, this is our mission. Because whilst presenting those, I think it is important for you to say, this is what we are proposing should be done. And if there should be a resolution on how we implement ANC policy and why we should not, when we come out of the ANC conference, say something different.
Now, Zimasa, you and Zingisa both went to this event. What did you make of the former president's speech?
He's testing his strength. He's trying to see that if I, Jacob Gelehlekisa Zuma, invoke the boogeyman of the NGC, will the youth of the ANC be receptive? Will they, you know, show interest in revolting against, you know, the current leadership? The current leadership that is, according to the former president of the ANC, they are refusing to adopt policies that are pro-poor, RET policies. And, you know, that's we know that's how Zuma rolls. First, he's a victim, then he gets people whom will support him in being a victim while he's turning them against the current leadership. So it's...
See,
but he's also exploiting this thing that there is no youth league, right?
Does the president, the former president, does he still have support within the youth league?
But there is no youth league. Is there a youth league?
No, there isn't. But you see,
Former President Zuma is very smart. Mm. One thing he knows, throughout the political course of history in South Africa and globally, young people tend to be very instrumental.
Of course.
I mean, just speaking about South Africa, 1976, one of the most critical moments in our history, it was the youth that was in the forefront. In fact, the ANC, which is one of the events that he referred to, the ANC Youth League, its formation was on the basis that the youth at the time within the ANC felt that the old guard was too soft, was taking too long to, you know, take them to where they wanted to go. And that's what Zuma understands. So that is why now he's trying to instigate the youth. But the funny part about him now is that he is the one who killed the youth. In fact, he killed a youth that could have been instrumental in taking him down, because you'd remember the youth of Julius Malema had said it, speaking about these policies that he claims to champion today, the radical policies, nationalization of Reserve Bank, and all these issues that he talks about today. It is when the Youth League of Julius Malema started talking about those that he stamped his foot down and got them expelled from the ANC. So it's very funny that it's him, of all people.
I feel like Zuma has sort of forgotten that he was president for 10 years. And if he wanted these radical policies, he could have put them in place very easily during his tenure.
But even the mildly not so radical policies that were taken at Polokwane and in Mangaung under his leadership of the ANC, we have a whole lot of policies that were never implemented under his leadership. So it's very hypocritical of him to just stand on a podium and expect that NASREC, within a year and a couple of months, this should have been done already, this should have been done. He's clearly trying to turn the youth of South Africa and exploiting our pain of unemployment and poverty and everything else that we experience, turning it against the current leadership, and that is...
For his own political violation.
Survival. I suka.
You see, one of those policies that he had a very big fight with, that led to the fallout with Zwelinze Mavavi, amongst other things, were the banning of labor brokers.
Yes.
That's not very difficult, eh?
And that was taken in Polokwane.
It's not even revolutionary, man. This thing, it should have been done a long time ago. Yeah, get rid of the middleman. Yeah.
So the youth, they say, we want jobs. Mm. They have to go and register to these agencies. Mm. Those agencies, they actually sell their youth,
of course,
to whomever.
Yeah.
Whatever happens during that period or at their workplace, they are not employed, say, by AMIL. Mm. So if you get problems with me, you just tell the guy, but you must bring someone else. This one is not, cooperating. Now I can't take you to the CCMA. Okay. I have to, very exploitative people, and they are... The employer pays the labor broker 15,000 for your work, and the employee would get like 4,000. Mm,
exactly.
That sort of, and he was president when those things were happening, and he was keeping quiet. I mean,
even on the South African Reserve Bank nationalization debate, I mean, that resolution was not taken in NASREC. In NASREC, it was just reaffirmed.
Of course.
It was taken in Mangaung, where he was re-elected president. He had a whole four-plus years to do something. He didn't do anything about it, and no one called for any youth to revolt. Well, there was no youth to begin with.
No, so, in fact, when he gets to the stage, the next time he wants to address a youth league event, if I was a member of the youth league, I would say, wait a bit. Please give us a presentation of all the resolutions that you implemented of the ANC, one by one, from number one to number last, and then we will check against the resolutions that were taken when you were elected. Yes. And then we have a proper debate. We say, maybe you are right.
Yeah? But let's look at the bigger picture here, Zimasa, because you're quite clued up with internal ANC factionalism here and how it
works.
Zuma's saying that the ANC's revolution has reached a stagnant phase. That's quite that's a very, very strong point.
Mm.
And the point he's trying to make here is that the movement that you voted for and the movement that you're part of is not fulfilling its mandate to change the country around. And this is a criticism of President Cyril Ramaphosa. Should nobody be taking any action against Zuma for saying something like this? This is criticizing the ANC as a whole, is it not? Is this not bringing the party into disrepute?
No, but I think that one is a fact.
No, it is a fact.
I agree with him on that one, but the stagnation did not start at the beginning of Ramaphosa's term.
Exactly.
It started, I would even say, rightly after the ANC got political power in 1994. Correct. They were supposed to make a whole lot of radical changes then. So they let it happen the way that it's happening now. And even under his presidency, it was business as usual. Mm. So why must Cyril stress himself and piss off investors?
Mm.
Why did he not piss off investors here in Uzum?
and you see, Uzumasa is correct on one thing. That statement is not far-fetched, but it's far-fetched in that he links it to the current president, Cyril Ramaphosa. Uzumasa is correct. The ANC reached stagnation when it took state power in 1994 because part of its mission, they had achieved the mission of political freedom, but they pretended as if the entire struggle was always about the right to vote. But the bigger mission of the struggle was to have, some sort of equality in society, jobs for everyone, equal participation in the economy. And those things haven't happened for 25 years under ANC rule. So the ANC in its entirety has failed and has stagnated in that, well, the only thing that they've been doing is to share and give tenders to their friends, and build Nkandlas and all those things.
And befriend Guptas.
You know?
If we take it back to then, what you and Zimasa are saying was when the stagnation started. There's a common factor there. The only person who had been there from there right up until 2017 the leadership, it's him.
It's him. Yeah.
If anything, exactly. He's one of the major causes of that stagnation. It reached climax when he became president.
He made it worse
and sold us to Kuptaz. It's him.
Oh, well, okay. Let's take a quick break and we're going to move into our next section, which is the story of the week. We're going to be talking about Auditor General Kemi Makwetu's 2017-2018 municipal audit results when we get back from the break.
Tune in to Cargumentative every Monday morning on Times Live Motoring. You can join myself, Thomas Faulkner, and my regular gang of automotive misfits as we discuss motoring news, views, and of course, have a cargument or two. That's Cargumentative, only on Times Live Motoring.
To advertise on the Sunday Times Politics Weekly podcast, email us at smiths@tisoblackstar.co.za. That's smiths@tisoblackstar.co.za. Welcome back. Now, this week, the Auditor General released his 2017-2018 municipal results, and it is catastrophic, to put it at the least. And he said, this undesirable state of deteriorating audit outcomes shows that various local government role players have been slow in implementing and in many instances even disregarded the audit office recommendations. And wow, if you look at his results, it shows that out of the 257 municipalities audited for the last financial year, only 18 received clean audits, a regression from the about 33 municipalities that had received clean audits last year. And a total of 63 municipalities have worsened, with only 22 showing improvement. Guys, you're out of 257, only 18. That's not even, I don't think it's even 10%, even less. But that is shocking. I know the Free State was one of the big warning lights going off last year, and now it just seems to have deteriorated even more. Does this show a lack of governance? I'm sure it does, but at a local level, we're looking at a national problem that we have around our state, and then we go down to local level and things are falling apart there as well. Where do we go from here?
Can I start?
Yeah, go for it, Okay. You've been waiting for this entire week.
Go ahead.
No, you see, local government has been a mess in South Africa for quite a long time.
Of course.
And one of the main reasons why it is so is that these small players of regional leaders and whatnot suddenly become big boys when it comes to council issues. The chairperson of the ANC in eThekwini becomes the be-all and all. So the point that was made by Samu was a very important point, that politicians, when these audit outcomes are published, they blame accounting officers.
Yes.
Meanwhile, it is them who bring their cronies who know nothing about governance and place them there as bosses in the municipalities in different levels, of
that
course, different portfolios. Now, when they have to account, firstly, they were brought here by Councillor So-and-so, who's the chairperson. So you can't touch them. But when Councillor So-and-so does something wrong, they have to go with it because the next morning their job could be over. So that's the biggest problem with local government in South Africa, one of the biggest problems. So they are not being held to account. And with the previous regime that we just came from, so if number one can eat, I must also eat, so we must all eat.
And that's the problem here. Everyone's eating and nobody's doing anything for the public.
And you see, just to add on Apua's point, I'm actually worried about the new amendments to the Public Audit Act, which say that there will be severe consequences in that in the future, which kicked in now in April this year. But of course, in terms of the AG, they will kick in the following report, where it says that now, in the future, accounting officers, if it was found that certain things like unauthorized expenditure were, you know, recorded because of clumsiness, they would have to be fined personally. And I did ask the AG during this briefing last week that what exactly Apua is saying, to say that, but most of the time we know, it's a known fact that most of the time when accounting officers sign off on things that they know they are wrong, they usually caution even council and mayors. But because of what Apua is saying, in that these people are at the mercy of these people, they are employed, they can be fired tomorrow. And if you know that the mayor here is a strong person who can literally turn the entire council against you, and they vote you out, and they vote to resolve that you must be fired, you will be fired, and you end up signing, at the end of the day, you take the flag, but politicians. And I think it's quite vague, the amendment to the Public Audit Act, on what should be done about politicians who put unnecessary and illegal pressure on accounting officers. So it's really shocking. Accounting officers, in the main, they take the bag for things that they know nothing about or things that they didn't instigate. At the core of this is the strong man and strong woman at the local level, as Apua correctly articulated.
I think let's just make a point here. Before people come and say that we're making wild accusations here, when we said that people are eating and not taking care of the public. The report found that 92% of municipalities do not comply with legislation. It means that they're not complying in the sense of management and procurement of contracts, which often involve suppliers not indicating a conflict of interest on the absence of and the absence of competitive bidding. This is what the Auditor General said.
And the city of Joburg apparently is the leading one on that point. Yeah,
we're coming to those ones.
So it's not like we're making this up. The Auditor General said that we're not giving out contracts properly, and this is the problem we have in our state and with our local governments, where we're giving, where politicians are giving tenders out to their friends who can't do the work, and then the cities end up suffering afterwards. Surely we need some sort of change in the entire structure and how we deal with these things. Surely, guys?
Yeah, look, one of the saddest part about the compliance versus the delivery of work, you find it when you go to these small towns. Tenders are issued. Some of them, actually, they comply. But when you go to the field and see the work that they've done, Chief, I was in my hometown this past week in Mtat. They are more potholes than they are tarred roads.
Yeah.
It's a mess. Yet, year in and year out, they budget for companies to upgrade roads, to fill potholes, and so on. It's really a mess.
South African looting is on a whole different level. If you're going to get a contract to build 10 bridges, at least like steal the money for one bridge, but build the other.
No, but it's worse.
To amplify the points that we're making with facts, on the same report, the AG reported, for instance, one of the cases that he stated, which speak to what Apua has just said, is a project in Metsima Hall to build a sports complex, which costed more than 20 million. And in terms of compliance and submitting that they spent, they did submit to the AG. But the AG says he was stunned. He almost collapsed when he went there. He couldn't find even foundation, no fence. But 20 million has been spent. And they're reporting that, when you check the tender processes, everything was followed. Yeah.
But there's nothing on the ground.
Now let's talk about something very different here. Let's talk about the metros in South Africa. Let's start with Nelson Mandela Bay in the Eastern Cape, sitting with a whopping 536% increase in irregular expenditure since the previous financial year. Now, that wasn't that when the DA was in charge of running that municipality?
It's when they took over.
Exactly.
Let's go to Johannesburg as well.
Let's talk about and let's then talk about Cape Town as well.
Let's talk about Tshwane.
So now the DA, who once said that they were running fully clean audits, and that was their promise for local government, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
They seem not to be doing too well here, do they?
Look, let me start on this point.
Now, listen, let me give you some background here. Piwe has been looking at this report, and he has been gunning to say this the entire week. He has been loading ammo everywhere. He's got some strong views on this, so we've been waiting to hear this for a long time.
Don't be like that. The only reason I'm passionate about these metros is because, you know, when you see the corruption and so on, and you believe, or the mismanagement of funds and so on, and you believe that the people who would take over from these ones would come over and clean.
Yes.
Only to find out that the metro that is being run by Mayor Mzwandile Masina, is the one that is doing better than City of Tshwane and City of Johannesburg. And in Nelson Mandela Bay, when Athol Trollip took over as mayor, it became worse.
Yeah.
Then where is the hope, Mus? And they were campaigning on this issue of clean governance just now. The previous mayor who was in charge when this was happening in the city of Tshwane, where the auditor general said it has increased by 500 million since the previous financial year, which is an unauthorized expenditure. Increased by 500 million. 500 million is a lot of money. That guy was running to be the premier of Gauteng.
Exactly.
Based on that ticket of clean governance. Now the auditor general finds that, but what clean governance are you talking about? Two of the biggest metros in South Africa, run by them. What hope do we have then?
It's horrendous. So basically, our opposition party is just almost, when it comes to local governments, just as bad as our governing party.
Absolutely.
If not worse.
Look, you've got to give thumbs up to the DA in the Western Cape. It seems it's a Western Cape thing. It has got nothing to do with the rest of the country, because those municipalities that they run there, the majority of the municipalities that have gotten clean audits are from there in the Western Cape, where they are in government.
Yes.
But it seems it's something they can't export. You see, it's like bafana.
But you see, I mean, even you see, of course, these three metros that are just getting worse, Tshwane, City of Joburg, Nelson Mandela Bay, they are run through coalition governments. First of all, I think that on its own raises questions as to whether that kind of system of partnership or power sharing, as they call it, it works. But by the look of the numbers, it doesn't seem to be working. But also
Wait. When I said Mzwandile Masina, he is running that municipality through a coalition.
Well, in fact, and he's an ANC guy.
But
the leading man in these other three are DA people.
So we must use the numbers. We must be fair when we're using the numbers.
Okay, and the DA. But I was coming to my point to say that the DA either, even in the Western Cape, they are deteriorating. I mean, they got, of course, 12 of the 18 clean audits in all these 257, but it's decreased. I mean, it's a 30 percentage point decrease from what they had achieved the previous year. So it, even them, the champions of clean governance, as they like to brand themselves, are not as clean as they would like us to believe.
Zimasa?
See, initially when this thing of coalitions started, when the ANC began not winning outright, a lot of people were saying that, well, now that we don't have a majority, people have to work together, and people are going to watch each other's backs, and they will hold each other accountable, and they will work together for the good of the community. But I mean, this thing, the report of the AG paints a very sad picture.
Yeah.
It looks like at the end of the day, we are just on our own. Nobody cares.
Let's throw it forward here. We've got local government elections coming up pretty soon. And based on this, where would you even vote? Who do you even vote for when it comes to local government? Because nobody seems to be able to do the job. Are we just in a state where nobody can do the job, even if they want to? Or are we just in a state where people are just just needing to feed themselves.
There's no accountability.
I mean, these things are very easy, especially at local level. When you are procuring, you make sure the paperwork is there.
Yeah.
And that the person who says they can procure, you can verify, they say that they actually do have capacity and they fix a road. I mean, they build the houses they said they were going to build. They actually build the toilets, not that thing that was done there in Amatole, that company that had Kodemandash inside.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those things, it's ridiculous. This is not rocket science. It's not like at municipal level they are building dams or they are building power stations or... And most of these contracts is for simple things.
Yeah, of course.
But they just want to eat in jail.
But which part of eating makes you not do what you are supposed to do?
But Galogu, you can't eat and be able to work at the same time.
There's no change. These people inflate these prices, first of all. There's always money to eat. There's always a chance for you to eat there because they... Samantha, if it's 50 rand, they say it's 150.
Yeah.
So there's still money to eat.
But you see, on that Zim alone, then another question should be whether this whole tendering system ought not to be challenged.
Of course.
You know, I'm not saying we just kill tendering. Maybe we need to, only follow the tendering system for major jobs, like could be real construction jobs. But really, to tender for everything, I think that is part of the problem here. And that talk has been ongoing, but it seems like there's no one who's willing, because of course the end goal is always to eat, and they play javelin. I give you, you throw it the other side.
So if you get tenders at a certain municipality, then the politicians that have power in that municipality, I'm sure they can even wake you up at one to go pay for a bill at Cuban.
Oh, there's some stories that Samasa knows about, but she can't tell us.
Maybe she has benefited from the Cuban.
But you see, one of the most serious problems when it comes to local government is that councillors are not empowered to scrutinize. If you see one council agenda, that thing is very thick. It always reminds me of Stone Season when he was asked about whether or not he had read the Nkandla report. He said, that thick thing. And imagine in one council meeting you get stacks and stacks of documents. So you need to be trained enough to know which agenda items are important for the day and what do they talk to. So when they go to their caucus meeting, they just go to the caucus meetings because the mayor wants to hide some shenanigans here and there. And they just brief them on and over. No one goes through the documents and find the real things that are hidden there by the accounting officer together with the mayor and their corrupt buddies. So they can't really scrutinize and ask, but what is this 200,000 for? At SCOPA, which is called MPEC at municipal level, and also during those sittings of council, and when the mayoral committees or members of the mayoral committees are going to those committees to present what they have done, the reports on update, the reports on what is being planned going forward, even when they are talking budgetary issues, IDP, they outsource the crafting of an IDP document to a company that charges them ridiculous amounts, and they craft those IDP documents, but now they think that their job is done. There's an IDP hours is to make sure the IDP passes, those, therefore the budget passes, but they never even question. But in this IDP, why do we need bicycle lanes in the CBD here in Johannesburg when there are big drums filled with field? Where are these people going to be cycling? Simple questions like that.
They even have expensive catering for council meetings instead of these people bringing their scaftin, because they get paid.
Yeah, of course. I mean, there was Prima Maguire and Mahmoud and all those things. I mean, we pay. But you see what you are saying.
No, it's bullshit.
Okay, last point, Zigisa, before we move on.
Yeah, but on what Abiu is saying about these people, it doesn't matter, brother, even if these people were capacitated. Part of the reason that, maybe a point that we didn't mention, is that part of the money of kickbacks and the javelin that they get from these business people, it doesn't only benefit them personally. At times, it goes on to sponsor their own
party. Conference.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. So if the kickback that were given by that guy who gave the biggest construction tender in this municipality, a half of it is going to go to the party, and you're a councillor of the party, you wouldn't care.
The 10%.
Because it's about you.
So nobody's talking about KZN here. Everybody keeps talking about KZN. We know what happens in KZN. But anyway.
But it's funny, I mean, on KZN, just to finish it off. I mean, KZN is not, Etegwini apparently is not doing that bad. I mean, given all the shenanigans that are happening around Mayor Zandile Gumede. But in terms of the books, yes, they are not doing, no municipality is doing perfectly well. But
Yo,
they are not.
Ndosi is the worst, but let's move on.
Yeah. Let's just round it off with the city of Cape Town. There they fired a mayor for these shenanigans. But they got a clean, they got a clean audit, right?
Yeah.
So these things, well...
Yeah, what were they up to there? Huh?
Yeah.
We wonder. Okay. Money has something to answer for here. But anyway, we're going to take another quick break. When we get back, we're going to be telling you what to expect when you're unsuspecting. And this week, we're expecting a big clapback from the public protector, Busisiwe Nkobane, after President Cyril Ramaphosa released a statement earlier this week about her report on Pravin Gordhan.
Young people are making their mark. Get up.
Tune into the Sebenza Live Behind the Hustle podcast every Tuesday to find out more about what fascinating careers are out there. You can find us on the Sowetan Live website,
or you can follow us on Twitter on Sebenza Live.
Sebenza boy.
Sebenza girl.
Sebenza.
Yavamdana.
To advertise on the Sunday Times Politics Weekly podcast, email us at smiths@tisoblackstar.co.za. That's smiths@tisoblackstar.co.za. So this week, President Cyril Ramaphosa has told Public Protector Busisiwe Mkabane, and Zagisa, I'm reading from your story here, that it is premature for him to take disciplinary action against Public Enterprises Minister Pravin Gordhan. According to a statement by the presidency on Monday, Ramaphosa has written to Nkobane informing her that he will wait for the finalization of a High Court application brought by Gordhan seeking a review of her report before implementing her recommended remedial action. Now, this has been a bit of a to and fro over the past couple of months. There's two big reports that the public protector is dealing with, which involve the president, one being the Bososa allegations and the donation, the 500,000 donation to his presidential ANC presidential campaign. And then we've got her report into Pravin Gordhan, which revolves around Ivan Pillay, former acting SARS commissioner, who was put on early retirement and given a nice big pension payout. But that, the courts found, was above board. So we're going to have to go, let's leave the issues of the report aside. Because we've spoken about that before. But let's get back into this. So now we have another tussle up between the public protector and Ramaphosa. And it looks like he's not really going to comply with her recommendations just as yet. So we have a little clip by an ANC journalist. And he was interviewing Deputy Public Protector Kevin Malunga, who sort of explained what the public protector is on about here.
Some quarters believe that when the public protector's report is out, that remedial action must be implemented,
yes,
irrespective of the report being taken on review. Do you agree with that?
You must get an interdict. That's what the court says.
So there's no interdict in this case?
There's no interdict in this case. But of course, I think, look, naturally within the nature of litigation, people have various interpretations.
Okay, now Gordhan has filed papers in the Gauteng High Court in Pretoria challenging the findings of Mkubane's investigation. But there hasn't been an she hasn't been interdicted in this matter, has she, guys?
No,
she hasn't.
That I know of.
And if you remember, back in 2016, the Constitutional Court ruled in no uncertain terms that the remedial action recommended by the public protector was binding and should be implemented. Now, this leaves Ramaphosa in a bit of a bind, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because basically he's got to take action on Gordhan because the public protector's report hasn't been indicted. But he's saying, hold on, he's taken the matter to court. I'm going to wait for these proceedings to hold out. Why can't he then just suspend Gordhan for now until the court proceedings are over?
You see,
that's what we would have expected from the other guy, let's be honest.
You see, for me, Amil, what confused me with the president's statement where he's claiming that he has complied. Okay, first of all, let's say the remedial action that the public protector had recommended on the president to take on Mr. Pravin Gordhan was to take, inverted commas, appropriate disciplinary action against Pravin Gordhan. But the public protector didn't say as to when in 30 days, but okay, she went on to say instead that the president must submit an implementation plan of how he is going to go about in disciplining Godan in 30 days in part of that implementation plan, which the president seems to have done, the implementation plan. And I think the statement of the president should have just stuck to that, to say that I've submitted the implementation plan as per the 30 days required by the public, and not delve into the issues of, you know, the court review, because there I think he is completely gotten it wrong.
But technically, would he not then be lying?
No, but I'm saying he should have stuck to the fact that he has complied with the 30-day implementation plan, which says that I will. But getting into the whole thing, it seems that here legally, as I mean, others have argued, as per the ruling in the EFF versus Speaker case, where it says at the end that for one to suspend the remedial action of the public protector, you have an order of court that I'm quoting from the judgment of the Constitution, an order of court would have to be obtained. And that is where people are saying the order of court would have been obtained by Mr. Godan alongside application for review and application to interdict the implementation of the remedial actions, which he didn't do, and now leaves the president having this constitutional quagmire that he's stuck in.
Yeah. See, but the problem here is that I remember back after this SARS inquiry that was held by Robert Nugent, they had they found Godan had not been guilty in any of these issues. They did a thorough investigation into this matter, and they found no wrongdoing. And if I remember correctly, a court also found that there was no wrongdoing in this matter. The thing is, I've read bits and pieces of the public protector's report into Godan, and it's just rehashing a lot of old stuff that has already been explained. So where does this leave a man who has been absolved of all these things, now having to face it once again? I'm not supporting anyone here, but now has his job on the line. Should his job be on the line?
You see, my problem has always been on this particular issue that, look, you know you have all these avenues and so on. And the public protector is a Chapter 9 institution. Yes. There has been numerous cases where someone has been taken to the Human Rights Commission. There is a public protector report, and a case has been opened with the police. So it can be that because the one has completed and found like this, that the two others can then follow their own processes. Mm. I don't understand the logic there. Fine, you can say you have been absolved. Mm. But with the public protector, you still have got the court, which he has followed.
Yes.
But according to the deputy public protector, is that, well, he has not done so correctly. So,
yes.
Mr. President, do as we say.
Mm.
And we've been saying true that with the previous guy. We were saying that, but comply.
Can the president say, I hereby reprimand you?
Because this thing was easy. What the previous guy said,
you know,
when he was forced eventually by the court, he wrote a letter saying, the public protector found that, and he has she has directed me that I must reprimand you. You are hereby reprimanded. End of story.
And you take a week holiday somewhere and come back to work.
And you see, what's really going to be tough here for the president, this ping pong that he's playing with the public protector and saying all sorts of things, these things may actually come back to haunt him.
Exactly.
Because, right now, yesterday, the EFF announced that they will be going to the Constitutional Court again. I mean, this is fine that the Constitutional Court will have to interpret
what are they going to the Constitutional Court now
to force the president's hand to act as per the remedial action of the public protector. You see, now we're going to have all these legal processes. This side, Pravin Gordhan has applied for review. This side, these ones want to force the president's hand. I think really the president must do something and bring this matter to finality, and because he's got his own headaches coming.
Exactly.
One is coming before the end of
July.
Musi is already licking his lips, saying that he must not dare touch our money when taking the report to review. He must fork out from his own pocket.
So he wants Musi Maimane, wants Cyril Ramaphosa to pay the funds from his own pockets.
Yeah, he has written to him today to say that if you are taking that report on Bosasa on review, you must pay out of your own pocket.
When are we expecting?
He's got deep pockets, so I mean,
when are we expecting that report to be released? The Busasa report.
Mr. Malunga here, during the same interview of the clip that we just played, he said it should be out anytime from now and the 31st of July, but we won't go to sleep by the 31st of July not having read that.
Well, let us hope that it is out before our next edition next week. But tune in again next week. Thank you guys all for joining me in studio. It's been a pleasure having you here, and thank you so much for everyone out there listening. You can follow us on Twitter at hashtag STPoliticsWeekly. You can also find us on our Times Live website under the Opinions and Analysis page, and we'll be posting links up at about everywhere on social media, so get us there. And please let us know what you think about the podcast. Give us some criticism if you think it's not working too well, and if you have some tips for us to make it better, we really would appreciate it. And colleagues, thank you so much for joining me in the studio again. We'll catch you all next week with another week of I'm sure we have some good concepts. Yeah, another week of shenanigans.
We must rename this podcast to be political shenanigans.
Yeah,
weekly shenanigans.
There we go. We might have a new name for you guys next week. Catch us then, and have a good one.